I wanted to ask, but I restrained myself.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have unlimited bacon, but no video games, or unlimited games, but no games?
It's a tough question. What does it mean for a Pokemon team to be good? And how do the best Pokemon players put them together on their quest to become world champion? I'm Aaron Traylor, and alongside Wolf Glick, we're going to interview the world's best competitive Pokemon players in order to find out their perspectives on the complex game of VGC, the Video Game Championships, the official Pokemon battling format. Welcome to Pokemon Perspectives. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Pokemon Perspectives. It's been a little while, so sorry about that.
I'm not sorry. No, I am sorry.
Oh, you're not sorry?
No, I'm sorry. It's been super busy, right? Like, yeah. We've both been, I think, kind of like struggling to come up for air. So, yeah, apologies for the delay.
Yeah, my goal was to get as many as possible of these recorded before Scarlet and Violet dropped. And the issue with that was then we like felt the need for the guests to, you know, get them out before Scarlet and Violet dropped.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we did one, and then the next week we did one, and then the week after that we did one.
Oh my god, we were schmoving!
We did schmoove, and then we did create a lot of work for our editor.
Right, thank you.
So maybe a little bit slower pace might be good. But I'm really excited about today's because we got to talk to one of our most longtime friends, Brendan Zeng, who you might know the name Zeng, because you've heard of Cybertron VGC, and Brendan is actually Aaron's little brother, which I think is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, Wolf, what's your first memory of meeting Brendan?
So, my first memory of meeting Brendan is actually at the very first tournament that I ever went to, which is DC Regionals 2011, where I won in the Masters Division, Aaron Zeng won in the Seniors Division, and Brendan won in the Juniors Division. So, I didn't talk to him very much. It was like, God, I don't need to go like long-winded about regionals back in the day, but it was a very different experience. But I remember I took a picture with him. But yeah, I think at Nationals that year is probably one of the first times I really hung out with him. Because yeah, I was hanging out with like Aaron and a bunch of like the friends that he had because I didn't really know anybody. And yeah, hung out with Brendan too. What about you? What's your first memory of?
Well, okay, my first memory I think is also hanging out with him at Nationals.
Uh-huh.
I think we're just like sitting on the convention center floor in Indianapolis, like, you know, opening Pokemon cards. But I do actually want to get into that with two questions. So first, what is the difference between Masters, Seniors, and Juniors? We've gone over this, I think, but we've only talked about Seniors in the episode with James.
Yeah. So basically, to keep it brief, there's three age divisions because they don't want children playing with like college students. And so the cutoff for the age division is by your birth year. So for example, I'm born in December of 1995. And because of that, I was playing in the Masters division. But if I'd been born in January 1996, just 1 month later, I would have been playing in the Senior division. So the lines in terms of age get a little blurred, but it's basically 10 and under is the juniors division, 11 through 14 is the seniors division, and 15, 16 and up is the masters division.
Yep. At that regional, you know, you, Brendan, and Aaron were all in different divisions.
Yep, which so we were all able to win.
So let's go back to that regional because like it sort of sets the scene for your career, but also Brendan's career.
Yeah.
So regionals back in the day were single elimination, best of one. So right now, if you were to go to a regional tomorrow, you would play Swiss best of three. And now Swiss means everyone finishes all 9 or 10 rounds of the tournament, no matter if you win or lose. Best of one means you play one game and the winner gets a win. And best of three means you play two or three games and the first person of two wins. So single elimination best of one means if you lose a game, you are out. You are done. That's your day.
Yes.
Now, I'm assuming that a lot of people listening to this podcast know how much luck is inherent in Pokemon. Tie that in with about 700, maybe, people? Was it 400, 700?
I think it was probably like between 300 and 400 that regional, but still, like, I mean, Brendan was in the juniors division, so it was not as many for him.
But that was still a lot, because I played in seniors that year, and there were 130 people,
oh my
God. There was probably at least, say, 60 people in that juniors thing. So, you know, powers of two, it's all one big single elimination bracket. He probably had to win 6 or 7 games of single elimination to make it to the finals.
Yeah.
So you had to be way better and also kind of luckier than everyone else.
Also worth noting that like regionals nowadays, they matter still, but they are a lot less impactful because back in the day, if you wanted to play in nationals, you had to get top, I think it was 8 or maybe 16 at a regional. 16. There weren't that many regionals. Like nowadays, anyone can enter nationals. The only tournament that not anyone can enter is the World Championships. But back in the day, if you even wanted to have a shot at Worlds, you had to not only do well enough at regionals, you also had to do well enough at nationals. So it was just much, much, much more difficult to qualify for Worlds back in the day, especially given the format like Aaron mentioned. It's a pretty big accomplishment to win a regional back in the day.
What makes this crazy is that in 2011, that was actually an improvement on the circuit from 2009, where if more than 128 people showed up to a tournament, everyone drew a number, and the ones with the numbers that were not 1 to 128 went home. That was called the lottery, and it was one of the worst things ever. So Aaron and Brendan have this story where they went to the Philadelphia tournament in 2009. They both prepared so much, and they were both ready to win that tournament. They drew bad numbers in the lottery, couldn't get it.
Didn't get to play, yeah.
So, you know, we've sort of set up the beginning of his career, but Brendan is notable, I mean, for many reasons. First, he's a fantastic guy. He's also notable for being perhaps the most notorious junior division player of all time, I would say. He spent 3 years in the juniors division. You know, that's pretty long. You know, given that you age out at 11, you have to, you know, be competent at the game by the time you're...
Start him young.
So he finished top four at Worlds in 2011, top four at Worlds again in 2012, and then he won the World Championships in 2013. So from there, he had a series of high-placing Worlds finishes in the seniors division. And then his first year in Masters, he placed in the top 16 at the World Championships. You'll listen to that. We're only really talking about Worlds finishes for Brendan, but that's just like the level of player that he is. It's just kind of insane that you can just say Worlds Brendan, Worlds Brendan, Worlds Brendan.
Yeah.
Top 16 in the Masters division is a huge accomplishment, especially for somebody in their first year out of seniors.
Yeah. In my opinion, there's a very strong case that Brendan might be the best juniors division player of all time in terms of like level of play, right? I think like there are probably some players with more accomplishments because there's some really strong junior players. But in my opinion, I think that Brendan is the best. Brendan, when he was in juniors, could have beaten most of the field in Masters, and I believe that to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've hyped him up enough. Do you want to go grab him?
Yeah, I'll go grab him from the other room.
Okay.
Right back.
Yeah, cool. All right. Sounds good. All right, and we have Brendan here on the podcast with us today. Welcome, Brendan. It's great to be talking to you. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well, yeah. Glad you could join us. It's really fun to have friends on the podcast and talk about Pokemon. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll be cool.
Yeah.
To start things out, Brendan, you've been playing Pokemon. I mean, we've all been playing Pokemon for the same amount of time, really, I think. You might have started in 2010, and Wolf and I started in 2011. But you were in the first juniors class. So what are your earliest memories of playing VGC, Brendan?
Yeah, Aaron and I went to 2009 regionals, I think, but I didn't really know much back then. I was like a little kid and neither of us made it through the lottery. So we didn't even really get to play. But yeah, we started in 2010. Aaron gave me a team that I had no idea how to use. You know, I didn't know anything about the type chart or EVs and IVs, and I didn't know what a lot of moves did. But, you know, back in the day, if you had a team of Pokemon with good IVs and they were EV trained and they had powerful moves like Blizzard and Water Spout, it could go a long way, especially in juniors. So I ended up getting top four. I think Aaron also ended up getting top four at that regional. We didn't do too well at Nats, but you know, I became a lot more interested in the game after like being successful early on, you know?
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Brendan, how old were you when you in 2010?
I was 8.
8 years old. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that like that makes some sense.
So, Brendan, when we were at Worlds in 2011 doing practice matches with some Masters Division players before the event, and you were kind of just crushing them, like, effortlessly, and they were getting frustrated about getting rocked by a 9-year-old. I'm not sure if your first experience lines up with that, Wolf.
Well, what you have to understand about juniors in general, I guess to kind of get the context of why Brendan is such a special player, or at least was like was such a phenomenon when he was younger, is because typically like junior division is very different. The level of play is just very different, which is understandable. We're talking about 10-year-olds and under compared to, like, you know, mostly late high school, early college kids, right? And so what was interesting is that Brendan looked like he was a Masters player and he was 8 and 9 years old. Like, it was genuinely almost like it was like you were watching him play and you were like, how is he really? There's no way he's actually like 9 years old. Like, it's not, like, there's actually no way, because the game is so complex. So the fact that Brendan was like, yeah, again, crushing Masters, like, division players, crushing anybody who stepped in his path, was like very impressive.
I totally agree. Brendan, I just want to, like, I want to hear your thought. Like, looking back, is that the same as like your assessment, what it was like to, like, play, or, like, you know, the kind of people you went up against?
Yeah. I certainly felt pretty confident as a junior. I think when I would lose, there would generally be things that I could point to improve. But when I was so young, you know, that's not, it's hard kind of sitting down and reflecting on your losses and being like, this is what I could have done better. So I would say, like, I definitely was a little bit overconfident at some points. But
for good reason, to be fair.
Yeah.
Part of, like, what I really like about Pokemon is those teaching moments. You have so much level of control over the game because of the strategy, but you also have no control because of all, like, you know, the luck and the fact that it's so hard to figure out why you lost. And I think learning to deal with those things is really important, especially as a young child.
Right.
You know, I started at, like, 14, and I wish, you know, I got on that earlier, you know?
Yeah, I would say, like, at 2013 Worlds, though, I definitely felt like, you know, I was on a different planet in terms of playing compared to everyone else. I really felt like, even if I played in Masters, I really think I could have top cut with my team and the way I was playing at that tournament.
Yeah,
I agree, for what it's worth. And I guess for context for our listeners, 2013 was Brendan's, it was the year that he won Worlds in the Juniors division. It was also his last year in the Junior division. So after that, he would be aging up into the Senior division. And the other important context that we should talk about is that, Brendan, you got top four at Worlds in both 2011 and 2012, if I'm not much mistaken.
Yeah.
Just so close you could taste it, right? Like, two people stood in your way and then you would have been world champion, and both times eliminated in top four. So yeah, I imagine that was a lot of pressure, right? Especially in your top four match where you were like, ah, please not a third time, you know?
Yeah, I ended up losing my first game in top four. It was one of the two games that I lost the entire tournament.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
And
two games, not sets.
Yeah. And
oh my God.
I don't know. I was pretty terrified. I was like, it felt like my opponent had, like, beaten me pretty badly the first game. And I was just scrambling to try to find any way to make sure I wouldn't lose the other two games. And I ended up doing it.
That's very impressive. I feel like anyone would crumble under, like, would, you know, be stood liable to crumble under pressure, you know, in that scenario, let alone at the age of 10, right? So,
And I mean, you handled it really well. Maybe this is a good time to talk about 2013 Worlds, which, you know, you did win. Maybe we could paint, like, a little picture of that metagame for our listeners who might not know it otherwise.
Sure, I should not be the one who does it, though, given my record of 2013.
Okay, Brendan, do you want to do it, Brendan? Because, I mean, I brought Torn of Asterion, so.
Yeah, but I think the rest of your team was a pretty good representation.
Oh, thank you. It's very kind.
What about my team, Brendan? What do you think about the rest of my team?
I don't know about Magmar.
Magmar was probably one of the better Pokemon. It was
Hippowdon,
Gliscor, and Registeel were probably not it.
Yeah. 2013 was, you know, it was a pretty standard metagame. I think, like, all the top Pokemon, you would say, are Pokemon that you could expect to be good, like Cresselia, Metagross, Conkeldurr, Heatran. Aaron and I, when preparing for 2013 Worlds, discovered that, like, Heatran with Eruption was, for some reason, completely underused in the 2013 metagame.
Just for clarity, that's Aaron Zenger, brother, not Aaron Trailer, me. Just like, you know, the listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we really exploited the fact that, like, no one was using Eruption Heatran and ended up, like, running through the entire world's metagame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eruption Heatran was also a big contributor in a rule change where in 2013, you were able to use any Pokemon that was legal, no matter where it came from. By which I mean, like, Follow Me Magmar, which is a Pokemon I brought to Worlds, was only possible to get from Pokemon XD. And it took somebody like 4 or 5 months to get one for me because it was just basically a very complicated process. And Eruption Heatran, this was played in Black 2 White 2, this tournament, but Eruption Heatran was only possible to get via Pokemon Ranger, which is a great game that I kind of want to replay, or at least it was a great game when I was a child, And it was like, it was locked into having a quiet nature. And so Eruption Heatran paired with the Fire Gem, which is like a one-time choice specs that doesn't lock you in, was very, very, very powerful and saw a ton of success at Worlds because players like Brendan and Aaron and many others identified that it was a very, very strong underutilized pick, but it was partially underutilized because it was just like really difficult to get and wasn't like part of Heatran's natural learn set.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always kind of wonder what it would be like if we discovered Eruption Heatran in 2012.
Yeah, I mean, like, we had less tools, right? There was less Landorus, right?
Yeah.
No one really caught onto Heatran in 2012, right?
Just one guy.
Except for you, Wolf.
Yeah.
Like, but I'd like to talk about your team then, Brendan. You know, just briefly.
Yeah, so the six Pokemon were Cresselia, Rotom Wash, Heatran, Escavalier, Jellicent, and Conkeldurr. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It was just like, one building for Worlds, I wanted to have solid matchups against like common pairs of Pokemon, which for some reason I'm like blanking on everything. But the only thing that I could think of right now is Lipard Breloom. I wanted to have a really solid matchup against that because I figured that was probably a pair of Pokemon that juniors would be inclined to use just because it's like the strategy was like you fake out everything and you spam Spore and then you just start like swaggering and doing a ton of damage with Breloom.
Yeah, it was very, very popular. It won, I think, a regional in... I think Aaron Zhang actually used it to win a regional in the US. I know Baz used it to some success in Europe. I think he also won a regional. And then Seijin, I believe, also won maybe nationals with it in Korea. So it was a very, it wasn't like the most popular pairing. It was like not high usage, but very high success. So you definitely needed to be aware of it. But there's something that you touched on, Brendan, that I kind of want to call out. So I think a lot of juniors division players, by virtue of them being so young, tend to have a lot of help from older players when building their teams. But my understanding was that you actually built most of your 2013 team on your own. Is that correct?
Yeah, I like asked Ray Rizzo to help me with like a couple of tweaks. And then I got the Rotom Wash idea from Aaron. But pretty much everything else I built by myself, you know, just by playing on ladder and figuring out what was working, what wasn't working. And yeah, I don't know. I put a lot of work into that team.
Yeah, no, it definitely showed. It's just, I think it's really cool because like, again, that team was better than I think most teams in the Masters division that year. It was certainly better than mine. And you were 10 years old when you built it. Your play alone was impressive, but the fact that you built your team is genuinely like shocking. It was incredible.
Brendan, the other memory I have that sticks out from when we were younger is the fourth move on your Escavalier. Your Escavalier, if you will. So it's Choice Band, and what are the main attacks? Like Mega Horn, X Scissor, and Iron Head, right?
Yes.
And what was it? We were in the hotel room the night before Worlds trying to figure out a fourth move. And I was like, Brendan, it's gotta be Return. And like, you gotta level this you gotta level this happiness on this Escavalier like before the tournament tomorrow. And you did that. Like, Aaron and I left to go get, like, ice cream or something, and you did that.
But, I spent, like, an hour trying to get what did you some max happiness. But I changed it to Protect.
Yeah.
Choice
Band Protect Escavalier. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, I mean, like, the idea was, like, there's no situation where Return would be better than Iron Head or Mega Horn or X Scissor. So at least if I have Protect, even though it's banded, I can protect on a turn that I'm like trick rooming and maybe bait in an attack and then switch out into Heatran. You know, they target Escavalier with the fire type attack, then I could get a flash fire boost.
Yeah.
I ended up clicking protect in a game and it ended up working out.
Oh my god.
Well, I remember that paying off and I was like, oh my god.
He's a genius.
I always, whenever I watch my finals match again, I always point out a situation where I think protecting would have been optimal near the end of my first game. Because my opponent had Parasong and I had 3 Pokemon left and she had 1 Pokemon, so it would have made total sense for me to protect in that scenario, but I ended up just attacking.
Oh, you had like guaranteed game?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Because Parish turns 3 turns, so you can protect, switch out.
Yeah, exactly.
Protect again, yep. And
but exactly. I wasn't even thinking of that.
That's really funny.
Cool, so let's move on from the juniors division, because while that's like, you know, how we all met and like where you did win Worlds, you've had like a pretty awesome career since then too. And so I guess the first thing that I want to talk about is in 2013, you won Worlds, then you immediately aged out of the division. So you went from juniors to seniors. What was that transition like for you?
You know, I think in terms of my play, I probably wasn't that much worse than like all the other established seniors, but I definitely, you know, got in my head, and there were definitely times where I was playing someone like Paul Chua, And again, like in terms of skill, I feel like we would be pretty equal, but I would maybe make like suboptimal plays just because I was playing someone like Paul Chua who had been in seniors for a couple of years. And I think especially when in my first year or maybe even in 2015, whenever I would lose, again, I wasn't really looking at like what I could have done better. I was just thinking like, you know, I have a couple more years in seniors, like I'll figure it out eventually. Let me just play for fun for now. So I think that transition definitely was a little bit tough for me.
Yeah.
I imagine it's like hard to come right off of a world win into like a brand new division, right? Like, because you're both the defending champ and a newbie at the same time, right? Because nobody knows how you stack up against other senior division players. And I also, I wonder, did winning worlds like affect your motivation at all? Like, because I know, I think Ray is the clearest example of this, right? Where he won three times and then was like, I'm done. At least that's my interpretation from looking from the outside looking in, where it was like, he didn't really have anything to prove. He didn't have any like question anymore. And of course, winning three times is different than winning once. But
yeah.
I'll speak for my own, actually. I'm a world champion, I remember. for me, I think that like, I was so desperate to win, right? Like I wanted to win so badly that when I did win, I think that like, it didn't make me want to win less, but I was like less desperate to do it. You know what I mean? So I'm curious if you had that at all.
Again, I think for like the first couple of years in seniors, I wasn't really that motivated to like try my hardest to win worlds. But I would say like definitely in 2016 and maybe in 2017 too. But yeah, I'd say in those years, I definitely felt like I really wanted to win again, but I don't think I worked hard enough to actually do it.
It's hard when you know what the work takes and you're like sitting there at the tournament. Like, I'm not sure if that's ever been the case for you, but like it's been the case for me where it's like I know how hard I had to work for my best performances and I've been sitting at the tournament like I haven't put that level of prep in here.
Yeah.
Let's just go over your senior division achievements real quick. In 2014, did you get 12?
Yeah, I got top 16. I like didn't have very good resistance. Yeah,
that. I mean, in the modern age, you would cut, so we'll call that a world's cut.
Did you bring like Thunderwave Roost multi-skill Dragonite to 2014 Worlds?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I brought with Rocky Helmet goals? Dragonite.
Rocky Helmet. Yeah. That's like I think that like something that is funny about VGC is some Pokemon look less surprising in retrospect when they are good in the current format. So like Dragonite was a Pokemon that until this year was like other than Geo, nobody ever used. It had like one player who like used it, but well, two I should say because you used it as well. But now it looks a little less surprising because people are like, of course Dragonite's good, but no, Dragonite was not good at all. But Brendan, well, it wasn't perceived to be good. I should say I'm sorry. Not that it wasn't good.
I remember being at Worlds and you showed me your DS with the Dragonite and you're like, what do you think with this cheeky grin, and I was like, why? Like, why are you doing this? I think your style of building teams is, you know, one of my favorite out there. Is like, you have these game states that you navigate to, and these Pokemon just are the best choice there. Mm-hmm. And I think that Dragonite is one example of that. So in 2016, you got top 8, I believe?
Yeah.
Can I tell my Brendan story about 2016 Worlds? So Brendan and I worked together for 2016 Worlds. We used the same team, and Brendan actually had a couple influential pointers for the team. One of them was, I think we had Thunder on Kyogre. I think it was over Water Spout.
Yeah.
And Brendan was like, no. And I was like, you know what? That's right. And that was hugely influential. And the other one, do you remember what it was, Brendan? There was another thing.
That's the only one I can think of. But
I think there was I'll double check, but there was something else where basically it was like a one move or one EV spread change, but it ended up being a really big deal. So Brendan also brought the team to 2016 Worlds. But Brendan did not realize that if you want to mega evolve your Pokemon, and this was like kind of the same thing for Z-moves, you had to get to a certain point of the game where you were given the mega bracelet, or for Z-moves case, you had to like unlock certain Z-crystals, otherwise you couldn't use them. So Brendan, of course, had been playing Pokemon all year, and he had unlocked the mega bracelet. However, Mega Rayquaza is not like the other Mega Evolution. If you want to use Mega Rayquaza, you need to beat the Delta episode of Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. Otherwise, even if you have a Rayquaza in game and you have the Mega Bracelet, it will not be able to Mega Evolve. So Brendan rolls up to Worlds. He goes to play his games, and his Rayquaza cannot Mega Evolve. Like, he doesn't have the button. And he's like, what's going on? And it's because he did not beat the Delta episode. And so, between rounds of Worlds 2016, Brendan is mashing through cutscenes as fast as he can to beat the Delta episode so he can Mega Evolve his Rayquaza.
Yeah, it's funny because in round one, I played against the Rayquaza Xerneas team, so I didn't bring Rayquaza until game 3. And I mega'd Gengar all 3 games, so I was like, that's weird. Like, Rayquaza doesn't have a button. But I thought it was because I had mega'd my Gengar. And then round 2, I realized that I just couldn't mega my Rayquaza.
And the difference between regular Rayquaza and mega Rayquaza is enormous. Like, mega Rayquaza was great in 2016 and 2019, and then 2022, like, when you couldn't mega evolve it, like, nobody used Rayquaza. Like, it's so much weaker.
Yeah. In 2016 terms, one outspeeds Xerneas and one does not.
Like, yes.
It's that important.
Yeah.
And then in top 8, I remember you finally got the Mega Ring, the Mega Bracelet, or whatever it is.
Yes.
And then you lost.
Yeah.
The round that you got it.
I didn't even get to use it because it was a it was a Groudon Xerneas team and we didn't really bring Rayquaza into
Yeah, we didn't bring Rayquaza into that. But top 8 is still a very impressive performance.
Yeah, it's...
I would say more so because you were basically playing with one restricted Pokemon.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that we can, like, you know, be kind of down about, like, a top 8 or, like, a...
Yeah.
You know, a 4-2 fail to cut sort of deal because those are incredible Worlds performances. It's just the standards that, you know, you guys have set. Let's move on to 2017, your last year in seniors. This is quite a trip through seniors. I think there you also brought something weird. Was it Dragonite again?
No.
Metagross Salamence type stuff, right?
Yeah. But I, like, was really struggling to, like, find a team for that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely, like, super burnt out because I just, like, wanted to win so bad.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell under, like, the common senior trap of, like, trying to use cool stuff to win.
Yeah.
When in reality, like, you kind of just need to use a team that you're comfortable with. Doesn't really have to be, like, anything too special, especially for seniors. But, yeah, I ended up just using, like, a team that I wasn't comfortable with. That I thought had, like, a bunch of cool Pokemon, but I think the team overall, like, wasn't very strong, so.
So basically, the idea was Salamence paired with Metagross, and you might think, oh, Mega Salamence and Mega Metagross. No, it was typically super bulky Salamence, like max bulk Salamence with Bulldoze paired with Weakness Policy Metagross. So it was a cool team, and it was kind of like the Dark Horse pick that people were aware of going into Worlds, or, like, I remember hearing about it slightly before Worlds, but maybe, like, day one, you know, or, like, right beforehand.
I didn't think it was, like, that threatening of a duo compared to, like, a lot of the other stuff. I don't know, like, Torkoal Lilligant seemed a lot more threatening to me than Salamence Metagross, but it was something that, like, I feel like a lot of people were preparing for going into that Worlds.
Yeah, sorry, just to jump really quickly, I must have been aware of it because I ran Mimikyu with Ghostinium Z at Worlds 2017 with Z Destiny Bond, but I also wanted an offensive ghost attack, and I actually went with Shadow Ball, even though Mimikyu's special attack is, like, I want to say it's, like, a lot lower than his physical attack, but Shadow Ball, basically, because Metagross has much lower special defense than defense, even though Mimikyu's special attack is 40 points lower than its attack, I still ran Z Shadow Ball because it could KO Kartana and Metagross, which was really relevant.
I just hated that so much.
I actually remember you being tilted by that. I remember it made you so mad.
How I feel about Salamence Metagross in 2017 is, like, because, you know, every year we have U.S. Nationals or NAIC in July, and then there's, like, silence until August, when Worlds is, like, mid-August, and all the players, like, work loosely in the same community. Like, we all hear whispers, and there's always, like, one thing that's gonna, like, change everything that, like, everyone's looking a lot at. And I think back in 2017, it was that. But the thing about those calls is they don't have a track record for working out a large tournament beforehand. You kind of just have to, like, hope that all your prep works out. So I think, like, that's kind of what happened to Metagross Salamence for the most part, is, like, it didn't actually pan out. Not sure, Brendan, if that lines up with how you think about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't play, like, any Salamence Metagross in Senior Worlds.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there were any, like, present. But after 2017 Worlds, I built a pretty good team with Salamence Metagross. This jolly max speed Metagross with Earthquake that I think was actually, like, probably the best way of using the duo. I get so, like, angry at myself for, like, not coming up with that before Worlds because I think I, like, genuinely could have won.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the worst feelings where you build something, like, really good and there's no tournaments left. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hate that. It's like, oh, I have it. I just don't have, I'm just not there.
Right.
Cool. So let's finally move into the Masters division. And I feel like for you, it was kind of like a finally after, like, at this point, it'd been 8 years, I think, or 9 of playing, like, I can finally play against the adults. Like, is that how you felt going up?
A little bit. After 2017 Worlds, I was really disappointed. You know, I really wanted to win in seniors. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had blew my shot And now, you know, I'd have to play against Masters. This is like what everyone's talking about, right? This is like the division that everyone cares about. And like everyone who plays in Masters is really good. Mm-hmm. And so I'd kind of anticipated taking a little bit of a break, maybe like a year or two just to focus on school. And I'd figured that my transition into Masters would be pretty rocky. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know, a couple weeks after Worlds, I went to a Brooklyn Premier Challenge, and there were like 30 people there, and like half of them have qualified for Worlds. I ended up winning the Premier Challenge. I don't know if you guys remember, but...
I do, actually. I couldn't have told you what you used, but I remember this. For context, Premier Challenge is like the lowest level of official tournament that happens, but New York is, I think, undisputed, the hardest, like has the hardest Premier Challenges because of how many good players live in and around the area. So a New York Premier Challenge could be on the scale of like a... Winning it could be of the difficulty of winning like a small regional. So it's like a big deal if you win one of them, in my opinion, at least.
You could have a Worlds day one or day two run that's like made up of players you could find at one of those PCs.
100%. Yeah. Sorry, you're going to go ahead. You won this PC.
Yeah.
You won the PC.
I won the PC, and I don't know. I felt like all my matches were like pretty evenly matched. I didn't feel like anyone was that much more skillful than me. So I kind of, you know, on my way back home from the tournament, I was thinking like, like maybe I could actually do this thing. You know, maybe I could like give Masters a shot, not take a break, and try to do well.
To your credit, I think you had one of the best first-year Masters performances out there. I mean, we've talked to Wolf and James Evans, who are also sort of in that club, but like you got top 16 at Dallas Regionals, which was huge at the time, and then top 16 at Worlds. Like, top 16 at Worlds as a first-year Master is a huge deal, I think.
Top 16 at Worlds is a huge deal regardless, I would say, like, even for, you know.
But now that we've really talked about it, you know, we've sort of put that into context, like, juniors, seniors, Masters, like, what you have to go through for each of those, like, Masters is larger. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Dallas 2018, if that's all right with you, Brendan. So this regional with 348 players, and you got top 16. And the reason I want to harp on this tournament is because, like, we talked before you went to that tournament, like, a couple weeks before, you sent me a team and you're like, what do you think of this? And I have the Pokemon up on my screen. It's Salamence, Tapu Koko, Amoongus, Azumarill, Ferrothorn, and Smeargle.
Yeah.
Your Amoongus. Your Amoongus has Protect, Rage Powder, Sludge Bomb, and Energy Ball. This is the same thing as Wolf sending me this Shadow Ball Mimikyu and being like, what do you think, bro? I saw this when you sent it to me before the regional and you're like, oh, what do you think? And I was like, why don't you have Spore? Anyone who thinks about VGC probably knows Amoongus because it's so good, and you run Amoongus because of Rage Powder and Spore. And I was just like, what? Like, why? And you're like, no, dude, clicking Spore is throwing. And I was like, why? So can you, like, tell me a little bit more about the reasoning there?
For everyone who's played 2018, I think the most threatening team day one was Sixmon Rain. Mm. And I had Energy Ball on Amoongus just to beat Swampert. It was like literally the only thing that it beats is Swampert. But I was just so terrified of playing that team, especially in like the early rounds of that regional, that I just like, I had to have a counter to that team. And I felt like Sludge Bomb, Energy Ball, Amoongus without Spore was like a pretty good counter to it.
Yeah.
But I also had Smeargle with Spore and Follow Me. So like for most purposes, I would use Smeargle.
You also had Tapu Koko, which blocks Spore with its auto-electric terrain. Mm-hmm. That sticks out to me because, you know, you start out VGC, you don't know anything, and you hear from other player, like, there are rules, right? Like, Incineroar clicks Fake Out and Parting Shot and Flare Blitz. Amoongus clicks Spore and Rage Powder, right? And you learn to use those principles. But when you get to, like, your level, it's like, screw the, you know, like, you break them, and not because you're like, oh, I think I'll see what it's like to run Amoongus without Spore today. It's like, this is what I need for my team. This is why I'm going to use this Pokemon. It's just like your Thunder Wave Dragonite, you know? If you can justify it, right? And it's a good justification, like, do it. That's how I feel.
I think some things are perceived almost like law in VGC, right? Like, you must run Speed EVs on top of Koko. You must run Spore on Amoongus. Like, choice Pokemon should not have Protect, right? There's a lot of these rules that are rules because in most cases they work, right? Like, most Amoongus should be running Spore. Most choice Pokemon should not be running Protect. But there are times where you break those rules. And I think not only being willing to identify where you should be breaking the rule, but also being willing to do it, because it's scary, right? I feel like when I do something like this, I'm like, if this doesn't work, I'm going to look very stupid. You know what I mean? You're both being able to identify properly where you can kind of break these what feel like truths of VGC and then also having the guts to do it, I think is a rare combination.
I think if you asked any of the Masters players in Day 2 Worlds in 2018, 2019, 2022, like, hey, would you be comfortable bringing Amoongus to this regional without Spore? They would all just be like, no. But you got top 16 for a huge regional. That's a big deal. And so I definitely felt like I was proved wrong.
I ended up putting Spore back on it for like the following tournaments. But yeah, I mean, I don't regret not having Spore at Dallas.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it, for the time, it was a time and place adjustment.
Right.
Let's finally talk about 2018 Worlds. You got top 16 in your first Masters year. I just want to ask, like, was this run different? Like, how did you prepare differently for Worlds than, you know, other Worlds in the past, other times in the 2018 season?
Yeah. So I think in terms of preparation, I kind of just did what I normally do, which is play a bunch of games. I don't think I did anything too special in terms of 2018 Worlds, but I would say like I definitely felt a lot more stressed going into the tournament. And that's something that you definitely, you know, have to take into account when you are preparing for tournaments, but for Worlds specifically, just because like it's the most important tournament of the year, like you don't want to burn yourself out. And I was definitely getting close to there because I was just playing like hours of Pokemon every single day. And I didn't really have much to do that summer other than play Pokemon, which is, I guess, the luxury of being a high school student. But it was like, you know, a week or two before Worlds where I realized if I keep playing Pokemon at the pace that I'm playing, I will not want to play Pokemon when I'm actually there at the tournament.
Right. Did you fix that by like totally toning it down and like taking a break, going outside?
Touching grass.
Yeah. I mean, part of it was definitely also like, I felt like, especially like 2 weeks before the tournament, I was working a lot smarter with how I was team building. I wasn't just like opening up every showdown game I could and seeing what sticks. I was like really thinking about all the things that I learned throughout the entire season, both in terms of like metagame trends and also things that I felt comfortable using. And I think once I formulated my game plan, how I wanted to approach team building around that, it made building my team just a lot easier. And it was a lot less stressful.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think that sort of management is one of the most important skills. Just managing, you know, how you're feeling about your relationship to the game and taking a step back when you need to. And focusing on, you know, higher level things like that.
Yeah.
Let's introduce your 2018 Worlds team to the class, Brendan. What were your six Pokemon on the team?
They were Salamence, Tapu Koko, Cartana, Nidoqueen, Snorlax, and Clefairy.
So we actually had a viewer question.
Oh.
Yeah, let me read it out. This is Brandon Martell. Thank you, Brandon. Hello, Brendan. I've always wondered, on your famous Nidoqueen team from a few years ago, did you ever consider Nidoking rather than Nidoqueen? And what specific damage calculations made you pick Nidoqueen for the tournament?
Yeah, I think I did think about Nidoking. But the only reason for Nidoking over Nidoqueen is like extra damage. And Nidoqueen already picks up KOs on Mega Metagross and Gengar, and it does a lot to Zapdos and things like that. So I never really entertained the idea of Nidoking that much, especially because Nidoqueen survives a Stomping Tantrum from Mega Metagross, which was like incredibly important.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal because that was the year of Mega Metagross.
Yeah.
The combination of poison, ground, and ice as offensive coverage was really good because almost all of the main Pokemon in the format were weak to one of those. It was like Tapu Koko, Tapu Fini, Mega Metagross, Zapdos, Landorus Therian. What's the other one? Mega Gengar, sorry. Mega Salamence. Everything was weak to ground, poison, or ice. And so Nidoqueen being like somewhat bulky, plus like having really good coverage, plus being able to use Life Orb and Sheer Force to actually get good damage was like the perfect spot for it. And Brendan identified that.
So I think one thing that struck out to me as 2018, and it's a season that like I will always remember, is the similarities between my Dallas team and my Worlds team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Salamence and the Tapu Koko are the same. The Ferrothorn changed into a Cartana, the Amoongus changed into a Nidoqueen, the Azumarill changed into a Snorlax, and the Smeargle changed into a Clefairy. And so like there are a bunch of similar roles on the teams, but when I was building for Dallas, it wasn't like I was trying to build a team that had the longevity to last all the way to Worlds. You know, I was just like trying to build a good team. But it just so happened that like throughout the entire season, even at tournaments where I wasn't doing well, I was still like noting things down about the metagame and about Pokemon that I like to use and strategies that I think really resonate with me.
Mm-hmm.
So like by the time I was building for Worlds and I was sitting down and thinking like, what are things that I think could be good? I had a lot of similar ideas with what I thought were good at the start of the format, which I think is really cool.
That is cool. I agree. It's very rare for a team that does well at the first event to also do well at the last event, even if it's like only 2 out of 6 same Pokemon. But yeah, I mean, the Pokemon are filling the same role. Like Clefairy for Smeargle, Kartana and Ferrothorn even have the same typing, right? Like Belly Drum Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Brendan, I got a question for you. I want to talk about your match against David Kotesh.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is a match that's been talked about a fair bit. Like, I mean, I made a full video on it because it's one of my, if not my favorite battle of all time. It was a really incredible set to watch. Could you kind of walk through the viewers, like give them an overview?
This is the second time in the podcast we're talking about this match.
Yeah, so maybe a brief overview kind of from your perspective, but I also kind of want to, basically my ultimate question is, how do you feel about this match? Like, I know that for me, you know, this is one of my favorite matches of all time, right? And I think that like, even if it's not everyone's favorite match, I think a lot of people regard it as one of the best matches ever played. And I guess I'm just wondering, like, you were a participant in this match. So like, how do you reflect on this match being, you know, the victor of it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm a little biased, but I really do think it's like one of the best like recorded matches of Pokemon of all time.
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah.
Just because like the team dynamic is so interesting between the both of us, and the context of the match is also a big contributor to like how hard we were both playing to try to win. And I think you could really get a sense of that based on every single turn, I think being really logical from both ends. And the fact that you really couldn't tell like who's going to win the match until maybe like the last turn of every single game or the second to last turn, which I think is very rare in high level play.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I don't think you played in the 2019 season, and 2020 sort of ended before you could really do anything, right, Brennan?
Yeah.
So you took some time off of Pokemon after Worlds in 2018. Was that like take a break, you know, after so long?
I mean, I went to a couple of regionals in 2019, but I just really didn't practice a lot for any of them. And, you know, my results reflected that.
Yeah.
I definitely was burnt out after 2018 Worlds.
Yeah.
And I remember like the Pennsylvania regional was like 3 weeks after Worlds, and I just in a completely new format, and I just really didn't want to play.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. That was my junior year of high school too. So I really didn't have the urge to play too much Pokemon.
Yeah.
And, you know, it only got worse for senior year because I had to apply to college and everything. And I also just wanted to like hang out with my friends and not go to Pokemon tournaments on the weekends. So I decided to just take a step back and wait it out.
I mean, I think that's totally fair talking about how involved everything was throughout your career, that there's times to like, you know, like be all in and times to be, you know, pretty much all out. And it sounds like you found like a healthy balance for yourself by saying like, yeah, maybe next time.
Right.
But like you're back, right? I mean, I think you're back.
The return of the king.
What brought you back?
I think I'm a naturally competitive person.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely something that's been missing in my life the past couple of years, and Pokemon definitely fulfills that like aspect.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's fun and you love it and it's like a good outlet for you. You know, I hope we can play forever.
Yeah.
I guess like, you know, just sort of like looking back, we've sort of like talked about your whole career. And I think one thing that it's important to point out here is that there aren't that many other juniors who've stuck around for that long, if that makes sense. We don't hear that often from other junior, senior, national, world champions. Part of it is like you've been around for like a really long time compared to some of these people. And I think that that's just like one element of what makes your career pretty interesting to me. I think this is a good place to ask this question if you're cool with it. Like your brother, you know, your brother is Aaron Zeng, but like your journey is like somewhat almost like completely independent of him, you know, outside from a little bit at the beginning, like he gave you a team for 2010 and then, you know, it's like separate. Like, how do you feel about that?
I'd say like, obviously when I was younger, it was important for Aaron mm-hmm. to help me, you know, practice and provide me with the resources that someone would need to be successful. Mm. But, you know, as you grow up, you're more capable of like coming up with ideas on your own and, you know, getting your own Pokemon and things like that.
Mm.
I guess your tendency to like rely on someone who's a little bit older than you like decreases.
Yeah.
Aaron and I, like, we live our own lives. Like, we don't live together anymore. So even that aspect of like communication can get tricky at times. We sometimes do talk about Pokemon at the dinner table when he does come back, but most of the time it's like, it's a pretty independent process. And I think just like in general, I'm like a pretty independent like worker, which
yeah.
I think nowadays might be not so good in terms of like doing well at Pokemon, but
I think it's fine. I mean, I think having like your perspective and doing things that are right for you like that I think, like, if nothing, talking about, like, your history of all these teams, it's like, you make some interesting decisions that work out and you can see why they'd be useful. Like, that's a really important perspective.
Yeah. I think there's definitely pros and cons, but I just want to say on this topic that I think it's really cool that you and Aaron have such distinct styles in your play and your team building, right? Yeah. Especially given that you worked so closely together for, you know, those early years. Like, I think it's cool that you've both fully developed into your own independent team builders, players, etc., right? Where, like, it wouldn't be shocking if you ended up with a similar style because, you know, you're brothers, but I feel like I could tell a Brendan team from an Aaron team, like, any day of the week, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, like, we've talked about how we would describe your style as a team builder, but, like, how would you describe yourself?
That's an interesting question because, I don't know, I don't feel like I have, like a specific style. But I think there are, like, Pokemon or, like, things that I would be more inclined to use, like Jolly, Max Speed, Snorlax, or Pokemon along those lines, you know, like, I don't like using, like, crazy stuff, but at the same time, you know, I'm not afraid to use Pokemon in, like, an unorthodox way.
Let me see if I can put this into words, and Wolf, I want to see if this lines up with what you would say. Is like, you're not afraid to play with the parameters of, like, Pokemon that you know are good in order to make them, like, suit your purposes, if that makes sense. Like, Jolly, Max Speed, Snorlax, like, great example. Snorlax is not a speed Pokemon. Why are you doing that? You know?
I would agree. I would say that, like, from my perspective, I feel like you're a player who has, like, a lot of faith in yourself, and I don't mean that in a way that, like, some people, if I said that, I mean, like, they're overconfident, but for you, I feel like you are, if you look at a team and you're like, this weird decision or this weird Pokemon, this weird move, this weird item, I think it's the right call for this. You're not going to shy away from doing it just because nobody else is doing it. Like, you're willing to say, I think this is right and that's enough for me. Whereas I think a lot of people need more validation if they're going to do something really off the wall.
Mm. Yeah, I think part of that definitely comes from me being like a very independent minded person. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like I need to consult with a lot of people for my ideas to like be validated.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm.
What does it look like for you to start and finish a team? As generally as you can, if you feel like you can put into words.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my process of team building is not that different from like most other people's. I generally pick like a Pokemon or a pair of Pokemon that I feel like I really want my team to like support. And then I just end up trying a bunch of different games with a bunch of different like combinations of Pokemon to see which ones stick and which ones don't. And the ones that work out, you know, I kind of just, I narrow in on them and keep playing and refining until they're Pokemon that I feel like could actually win a tournament.
Right. That makes total sense.
I have a final question at some point.
I was going to do a final question.
But okay, then I'm going to do the penultimate question.
You do the penultimate question.
Okay. Brendan, I guess what I want to know is, so you obviously had a super impressive career thus far, took a little bit of a break in 2019, 2020, and now you're back. And so I guess my question for you is, what's next? What do you see your involvement with Pokemon being?
I would say my goal is probably just to win worlds. I really don't care about winning regionals. I really don't care about winning internats, any of them. The goal for me has always been to win worlds. Yeah, I don't know. Anything less than that is something that I don't think I would be happy like achieving anything less than that. So
okay. Good answer.
Wow.
Yeah. At the same time, like it's obviously so hard to win worlds that like I get it if I'm not capable of doing that this year or any other year. And I feel like, you know, if I retire after this year, even if I don't have like a great season, I could still be happy with everything else that I've been able to achieve.
Yeah. I mean, you are still a world champion. Like you'll always have that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's a really, you know, as a competitor, like, I think that's one of the best perspectives out there is like, we all know that like, it's so hard to win worlds, like wanting that feels kind of ludicrous. But like, if you push yourself and you give yourself that dream, like that's what you need to do to work towards it. Yeah, you might fall short. To me, it's like the trying is like a big part of it. I'm not sure if that's how you feel.
Yeah, I think if I could come out of the season knowing that I worked really hard, like that would be a success to me, regardless of how well I do.
For sure.
I like that.
I just have one last question for you, Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, did you know that they paint boats red to make them go faster when they move through the water?
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Did you know that you're a big nerd?
Do you know why Electros learns Dragon Claw, dude? It's an eel. Why is it clawing like a dragon?
I'm so lost.
So we were in the park in 2013 after, you know, Brendan had just won Worlds and Aaron had just gotten fourth. And we were just hanging out. It was Stanley Park in Vancouver. We were just walking around and, like, asking each other, like, these dumb questions. Like, we were 14 and, like 10 at a park. Like... And that's always going to be like one of the, you know, happiest days of my life. So I'm just very grateful to have been your friend, Brendan. And I'm, you know, really proud of all that you've been able to accomplish. And thank you for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Just before I shout out the credits, I'd like to let everyone know that we have a email. So that is PokemonPerspectives@gmail.com. If you have questions for our guests or for us, please send them into the email. We will get to them, I promise. Unless they're bad. Credits. This podcast was produced by Aaron Traylor and Pedro Lima. It was hosted by Aaron Traylor and Wolfglick. The podcast is edited by Pedro Lima, and the music is Toy Dog by Eyeliner. Thank you very much. Cool. I guess we'll sign off then. Catch y'all next time. No, that's a layman.
This has been Pokemon Perspective. Bye.
That's a better idea.